and welcome to Tech Weekly from The Guardian, your audible, pleasurable and utterly indispensable guide to what's been happening in the technology world over the past 7 days. This week we're coming to you live from the floor of the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas, the high-tech equivalent of the World Cup. Now, if you tuned into any of our special shows last week from CES, you'll have heard from the likes of Microsoft and Intel. But since the event's now closing, we're going to take a look back at what happened here in Sin City. We'll be talking to radio maker Pure about its plans to expand into America, finding out what the British government has done to help UK technology companies make an impact here, and discuss who came away from the show cloaked in glory or covered in shame. So, sit back and relax. This is Tech Weekly at CES from The Guardian. British companies are out in force here at the 2010 CES, but one of the most interesting is Pure, which is just getting ready to launch its products in America. Now, why does that raise eyebrows? Well, because in Britain it's known as a maker of DAB radios, and that's a technology they don't even use in the United States. So, what's the deal? Is it worth coming to CES? And do these expansion plans indicate that maybe British technology companies on the whole are on the up? I asked Pure's Colin Crawford to explain exactly why the company was in Las Vegas, despite the fact that America has no idea about digital radio.
Well, we're here for obvious reasons, really. It's a big market and there's a big opportunity here. You are right that digital radio pretty much is unknown in America. There's HD radio, which hasn't done anything yet, and there's satellite radio, which is in car and has got big numbers, but hasn't really, certainly isn't making anything commercially yet. So the in-home market is completely unknown, and no one's really made any inroads into that at all. And that's something we're very, very familiar with. We've done this before. So digital radio in the UK was nowhere in 2000, and almost nowhere in 2002 when we launched that first little wooden box you mentioned, the Evoke. And we became the leader in digital radio straight away, and we became the number one manufacturer of radio very, very quickly. We completely made that market in the UK. We did the same in Switzerland. We did the same in Denmark. We did the same in Australia. So we know how to break into markets. America gives us extra challenges because we don't have DAB to go in on the back of. But we've now got a really strong range of hybrid radios, which are combined broadcast radio and internet radio. We'll actually launch with 6 internet-connected products in the middle of this year in America. And we've got a very much a growing and a quickly growing range of those products in our roadmap. And the reaction, really, to what we've shown here at the show has been phenomenal.
I wondered, how important is it to you, A, to be here, and B, to move into America as a market anyway? Is it, you know, a massive gamble? Is it a make or break thing? Could it turn you into a serious worldwide brand? The Consumer Electronics Show is kind of the highlight of the year for lots of manufacturers. Is it going to be that way for you?
It's seeming like it is, actually. I must admit, when we came, I wasn't entirely sure was it going to be the right thing to do, but it has been a phenomenal show for us. Not only American visitors, but the international visitors here have been fantastic. In terms of gambles, no, we're a pretty conservative company. We're not going to bet our shirts on America. We're going to take it carefully, steadily. We're not going to, we're not a company that's just going to go and blow gazillions on marketing or whatever. We'll take it very carefully. We've got a really good PR organization who've already made incredible inroads just in the very short time here at the show and prior to the show. We got Sensei as one of the top 10 gadgets in the Wall Street Journal. The reaction has been phenomenal. I think people are it's not just the technology, and that's the great thing about it. People are actually coming in the stand mainly, I think, because of the design. I think they're seeing us as a very new European design. Things look gorgeous, and they're attracted by the products. They come on and they're asking, "Oh, so what's all this?" And then when you tell them the internet radio story, they go, "Oh my God, that's phenomenal! I didn't know you could do that." So we've got a lot of education to do, but yeah, we've been, as I say, in this situation before. I'm sure we'll manage it.
I've been speaking to lots of British companies around the show, and a lot of them have talked about it's quite difficult to take on some of the big brands that exist, the American brands or the Far Eastern brands. These guys are pretty well established. But one of the things that a lot of British companies can hook into are things like content, because British broadcasters, you know, the BBC is a name that everybody around the world knows, and there's a kind of rich history of bringing services to people. How does that work for you? I mean, in the UK, you came in on the back of DAB. Can you come in on the back of the BBC and other organisations to bring digital radio to America?
The answer is yes. I mean, it's very, very good that you asked the question, to be honest, because content is central to this whole thing. All of our radios, all of our internet-connected radios use the Lounge as the portal. It's thelounge.com. And on there, you've got access to internet live streams. We do have basically access to the whole of the BBC On Demand stuff, the iPlayer content. We've got access to loads of podcasts. But we're very actively looking at building that content portfolio. And that is absolutely going to drive this market. It is content. Content is king. But you've got to have content. You've got to have usability. You've got to look good. No one's going to buy something that delivers fantastic stuff if it looks like some cheap tat.
So can you just explain to me as well, from the perspective of a UK company coming out into an international show, first of all, is it beneficial to be British, or is it so international that nobody cares where you're from? And secondly, how do you get a sense of the British technology industry? Is it doing well? Is it doing badly? Do you feel representative of it in any way?
Oh, we absolutely do. We're very we had these discussions very much with our. We've opened an office in the US, and we've had very interesting discussions about how much do we go on that line of, Billy Britton, wave the flag to hide it away and pretend not to be. And we're not jingoistic about it, but we're definitely not going to hide it either. We're very, very proud to be a British company. And we definitely do feel that there is a lead, particularly in radio, coming from Britain. If you look not just at Pure as a radio brand being the world leader in digital radio, you've also got our technology company that we buy the raw technology from, Frontier Silicon, British company that we help found. And then the technology that they license is from our parent company, Imagination Technology. So there's a really strong radio tradition. I mean, and you can understand that. Britain has just always been radio-centric. And a large part of my passion, really, is because I absolutely want to get radio back into the centre of British entertainment, British life, really, because I think it has been sort of sidelined. It's seen to being sort of second-class citizen to TV, but I think we've already made real inroads into bringing the whole sort of radio game up, and with things like Sensia, with the colour touchscreen and the things that it's delivering, we're really starting to see radio and digital radio and internet radio starting to be talked about again. As something exciting, not something old-fashioned, and that's terrific.
That was Colin Crawford of Pure there, discussing what it means to be British at CES. He's not the only one talking up technology pioneered in Britain, however. Another one is UK Trade and Investment, the government department responsible for helping homegrown companies succeed internationally. Now, they've brought a selection of small companies out to CES to try and boost awareness and help forge partnerships and deals. I caught up with UKTI's Steve Williams and his colleague Stuart Revel from Digital Comms KTN to find out how their mission had gone.
This is a big show, it's a huge event. UK companies are all over this event, but what we can do here is pull them all together and push out a single message. Come to the UK, we are powering, enabling a lot of technology these days.
So one of the things I was wondering about is you just said that, we're powering technologies. And there are a lot of things going on in Britain that are really big, but they tend to happen under the surface. We don't have that many big consumer brands anymore. All of the PC manufacturers are American or from the Far East. Things like that people touch and feel every day. We don't have any mobile phone manufacturers, that kind of thing. How do we sort that out? Like, is that a problem that we have to worry about? Is British technology happy being under the skin of everything? Can it power stuff? Stuart, what do you think?
I think one of the objectives for coming to a place like CES is to actually showcase that technology. We have an example actually on our stand, which we're showing from right at the top of the value chain. We're working with the BBC Research and Development Department, are looking at new concepts for content to deliver that over what's called a femtocell, which is a new technology, which is designed in Swindon by a company called Ubiquisys. Inside that is technology that's being developed by companies like Pikachip and Lime Microsystems. And they've been delivered to a Samsung mobile phone. And people think, well, you know, Samsung mobile phone, actually, that's a Korean company. Well, inside is a huge amount of UK technologies. And there's four companies, Arm, CSR, Wolfson and Dialogue, that are inside that.
Steve, I was wondering, what's the past year or two been like for UK technology industry? I mean, Britain's been hit by the recession, but has the technology industry taken it particularly hard? You were talking then about some of the companies, you know, Arm's doing pretty well, Wolfson's had a few troubles. How's it felt?
I think it's mixed across the board. We hear some disappointing stories, but there's still a lot of good success stories out there. From a satellite side, Inmarsat, still a big success story this year. We ran an event in Coventry in November called Technology World, where we brought in a lot of international buyers to that event. The initial feedback is business generated for UK companies of around £10 million. So we're still doing the right things, and our companies are still selling. They've had a cut back, but a lot of those companies are still producing the marketing and still creating the R&D as well. These are difficult times. The reason we're at this event with this large stand and this presence is because the government recognises this. Through its New Industry, New Jobs initiative, we managed to secure extra funding to come out here and help the companies at this event. So this is where we're trying to make a real difference now.
The show's still going on around us, and we're sitting on top of the UK Trade and Investment stand in the shadow of Sony over there. Our guests today are Michael Brook, the editor of Gadget Bible T3, and Tasha Eikensayer, the science editor for National Geographic's website. Hello to you both. Over the years, British technology companies have kind of risen and fallen. Back in the 80s, the computer industry, there was a lot of excitement going on. Things have faded away. You know, it's kind of hard to tell where things are going. I wondered, Michael, do you think the tech industry in Britain is back on the rise? Can we take over the world?
Well, Arm's a really good example because they've been around for a long, long time in virtually every smartphone on the market. But there's a lot of kind of that backroom stuff going on, and not a lot of kind of big brands coming out of the UK that you've heard of. Relatively few other kind of big ticket brand. So yeah, I mean it's not something you can you're not looking around the show now going British, which is it's a shame. But there are some big brands behind the scenes.
Mm. Tasha, I wondered if a company wants to make it big, what would you suggest? What's the way to crack America? Do you have to just spend a lot of money? Do you have to be big and brash and, you know, come over here? Or do you have to get under the skin of things and, you know, just try and
probably have a good chance getting under the skin of things and finding a niche and then having your content available through multiple media.
And, Michael, I was wondering, is there anything that you've seen particularly that's from the UK that you didn't know about or surprised you, or have you found out, you know, that the technology behind something turned out to be British when you didn't realise it?
There's a Bluetooth device which I immediately forgot the name of that lets you you kind of keep track of your kit, which is great. And some really good stuff. But again, not a vast amount around the rest of the show. It's great to see this stand because obviously, you know, it's good to get behind the Brits when we're out here. But not a vast amount, no, I have to say.
So I wanted to broaden it out a bit, talk about the show in general and what we've been up to. Tasha, I think it's been a really interesting week as far as I'm concerned, but you've been having a look at a lot of green stuff. Now, that's a big trend that's emerged here, and it's kind of been growing for the past few years. All the companies want to talk about how green they are and how amazingly environmentally friendly their electronics are and their batteries and that kind of thing. Now, I'm slightly sceptical of it all, but you've been really digging into it. What have you seen? What do you think?
I have been trying to dig into it. So I think this is the second year that CES has had green sessions and a green tech zone. I mean, if you go to the green tech zone, I don't know if you've been there, it's a lot of tiny little gadgets, right, that aren't exceptionally useful or functional. But then when you go to the bigger booths like Sony, Samsung, they all have little green sections. Getting someone there to talk to you about why things are green is a little more difficult. So I've been wandering around just trying to get people to give me a little more detail. Exceptionally hard to do. I don't know if you saw the Greenpeace report that came out a couple of days ago.
Yeah, this was their kind of quarterly report, I think, where they rank technology companies on how good and bad they are. And I think Apple moved up slightly. Nintendo is right at the bottom because they never talk about anything. They don't tell you what they're doing. But, I mean, basically they said nobody's doing great.
Right. I think Sony Ericsson has a 7 out of 10 points total. So no one's green. Of course, we have to figure out what green actually means in terms of electronics. Does that mean that you're using recycled components? Does it mean you don't have any toxics in your product? A lot of companies are saying, yes, we use recycled packaging. But that's really small potatoes compared to the bigger picture when you're producing electronics that eventually, and because technology changes so fast, eventually end up in the waste stream. Take-back programs are becoming increasingly popular. So companies like Sony are doing a good job of taking back electronics using a small amount of recycled content in their new products.
Well, Sony was showing off a laptop made from recycled CDs, I think, which, you know, kind of struck me as a bit of a gimmick, but it was still, you know, it's still better than going and getting this stuff from, you know, from some hellhole mine somewhere. And
better than nothing, yeah. But when you read the fine print, it's 20% of certain components use those recycled CDs.
Oh, okay. So always read the fine print. Mike, what do you think, Michael? I mean, is green something that the technology industry can ever really manage? I mean, these gadgets, they use power. Electricity is generally bad unless we go for renewable sources. They're built with batteries that have things that are bad for the environment. They're made from plastics and metals that aren't necessarily great. I mean, it seems like is it a lost cause, really, to argue this?
Your point's a good one. I think when you're talking about how quickly technology moves, and you're, you know, month on month, there are new things coming out, and instantly something's obsolete. And like you say, it's all waste at the end of it. Sony, I've spent a bit of time with, and they've, since IFA, I think, last year, since a big show in Germany, they've been talking about recycling a lot, and also in the manufacturing process, how much of a carbon footprint they've got there. So it is kind of at odds with the industry as a whole, but at least people are making an effort. But like you say, it's impossible to find anyone you can talk to about why particularly they're doing it.
Yeah, and they're trying to sell us stuff. I mean, you know, they're here trying to get us to give up the mobile phone we use for that we got 6 months ago for the next greatest one. Tasha, I mean, are you optimistic that one day this will be a green technology world we live in?
I think it'll take a while, and right now it's interesting to see what is leading the charge in terms of making green product. It's regulation. You probably heard about the California TV laws now, regulations that require a certain energy efficiency. That caused a tizzy with electronics manufacturers because all of a sudden they were worried they'd have to meet standards that they didn't. Turns out a lot of them do anyway, but right now consumers aren't the ones demanding green product. It's legislation and regulation that's setting the standard.
Yeah.
So until consumers know what to ask for, they know how to figure out what chemicals are in a product, a lot of people don't even know what a kilowatt hour is, so getting consumers educated.
That's true. I put my hand up and say, actually, I don't really know what a kilowatt hour is, which is probably a good time to move on from that as soon as I've exposed my idiocy. Michael, I wondered, in terms of the big picture, the big trend stuff that we've seen here, we've seen a lot of 3D, we've seen a lot of tablet stuff. Aside from those...
I was hoping you wouldn't say aside from those.
Yeah, the other day I tried to encourage people not to talk about them, and it didn't work. So today I'm going to threaten physical violence. If anyone says 3D, I'm going to punch them, because I've just heard so much about it. But have you seen that you think is maybe something to keep an eye on for the future, or just to that's kind of made you raise your eyebrow and felt interesting?
3D and... To go back to 3D. All right, so not 3D, but a tablet. I really like the... have you seen the convertible netbook, Lenovo, the U1?
Yeah.
That's probably the thing, other than all the 3D stuff here, obviously it's tablet computing, so I'm sorry about that.
Yeah.
But the one thing that's kind of made me... I have to say, this year, there's not been a Palm Pre or an LG Watch phone or anything like that. It's a lot of 3D, a lot of 3D.
And yeah, well, that's the thing. It's been... It's probably been... One of the most disappointing years for me in terms of the breadth of stuff, you know, everyone seems to be kind of uniting behind just a handful of ideas that they're hoping, maybe it's a recessionary thing, they're all hoping if they all gang together and go behind one idea really big, that that will work, rather than kind of gambling on going for, you know, being the standout product or something like that.
I think it might just be a cyclical thing. It's just that time there's a lot of mature technology around, new stuff coming in, and it's that kind of in-between period where not a lot of people are launching new concepts.
Tasha, how do you think, I mean, you come at things from a scientific point of view. Have you seen any things that might be coming down the pipeline that got you excited or made you think, like, there's some possibility here that I didn't expect?
Well, just generally speaking, I think the fact that everything is getting smaller is very good from an environmental perspective. So you've got less resources going into a product. And then going forward, I think OLED technology is fairly promising. 50% more energy efficient than the LEDs on the market now. And I think there's, you know, a couple OLED TVs out there now, and they're also smaller. 15-inch, I think, is the max size you're going to get. There's a lot of, like, attention being paid to vampire voltage. I don't know if you've heard of this.
It's just kind of sucking away when you're not doing anything
when your
effectively.
When TV's on standby or your computer's already charged, there's still a current coming out of the wall. So it's exciting to see manufacturers now taking that into consideration, like Sony's television they have in their eco section has sensors. It notices when you aren't there, it'll dim the screen to save energy. There's a switch you can turn on to stop the standby power from coming into the machine. You won't be able to use the remote that way, I don't think, but, you know.
I wondered about the screensaver, the TV screensaver idea. I mean, if I'm sitting in front of my TV not moving at all, is it going to turn itself off halfway through and I'll jump up? Oh, my God, you've suddenly switched off my favourite programme.
That's a real concern, I think, about Sony one, because, it literally is all about movement. So if you're kind of vegged out on your sofa, then it could well turn itself off.
Did you guys go to the Panasonic screen section? They've got a huge, like, entire home energy management system set up where there's a hydrogen fuel cell for your home, which is pretty cool.
It did strike me as slightly ironic that Panasonic were kind of proudly puffing their chest about this while standing next to a 152-inch plasma screen, which I went and asked how much it was going to cost, and they said, oh no, this is just us showing off. This is for display purposes only.
Yeah.
So there's this kind of tension between wanting to be bigger and better and developing these new things.
And but being practical,
Do you think hydrogen fuel cells are ever going to take off?
Again, I think that's going to come down to regulation. The one that they have in the Panasonic booth is being used in Japan, and the Japanese government runs it through the Japanese utility service, and so they'll set it up for you in your home, service it. So it's happening, but only in Japan.
So we need like the NHS for energy, basically, to come along and supply us with stuff. It's interesting. I'm not sure. I mean, America. I'm not sure America will ever go for that regulation.
Fingers crossed. Yeah, it's going to be a long road.
Yeah. Well, maybe we'll see how CES 2011 goes with that. In the meantime, you can find out more about CES on our website, or see the latest stories and the stuff that's happening after the show by going to guardian.co.uk/technology.
I'm Susie Weezer, and this year at the show, much to my horror, I've become convinced that actually there's nothing we can do to stop it. 3D TV is on its way, it is coming, and it probably will be in a living room near you in the future at some point. Having said that, I do think manufacturers maybe need to look a little bit closer about the design of the glasses, because they're all over the televisions. No one's actually addressed the fact that the glasses still look stupid.
Before we go, Susie, I just wanted to say, as of next week's show, Alex will be back in the hot seat after an absence of years, it feels like. But we also wanted to thank you for your sterling efforts over the past couple of months and stepping in and presenting the show in your inimitable style. So we've got a little gift for you to say thank you. In Las Vegas style, here are some poker chips.
It's my best bits.
Some poker chips. I'm not entirely sure if they're worth anything, but, you know, they're kind of cheesy and nice.
Thanks. This is even better than coming out the Celebrity Big Brother house. That's brilliant. Thanks.
Now, it's almost time for us to finish, but as always, we're keen to hear what you think. Reckon 3D is dead in the water? Think electronics companies are greener than we give them credit for? Well, if you want to tell us what you thought of CS or anything else, just drop by the blog, send a Twitter message to @GuardianTW, or visit our Facebook page. The details of how to do that are all on the site. With that done, I'd like to thank our guests today, Colin Crawford, Steve Williams, Stuart Revel, Michael Brook, and Tasha Eikenseyer, as well as our producer, Scott Corley. Now, as you heard, next week marks the welcome return of Alex Kwiatkowski, who should be back in charge of the pod, and we've certainly missed her over the past few months. But until then, I'm Bobby Johnson, and thank you for listening.